Chris, shoot.
Okay. I basically had read and I've seen before that, you should prove, choose your the amount of protein that you get per meal. Sorry, my little animal is going nuts. Per meal, based on, and I know you've got a lot of information about protein, but based on your ideal body weight that you want to get to, the ideal weight you want to get to. So my question, I guess, is if that, how does that play into what we're doing? Because how do I know that that's like, is that wrong? Should I just ignore that and go, no, 120, to 140 grams. I've been trying to get in. I struggle, even with the, really being on, I think, with the diet, but I'm just always struggling to get that extra in there. I know you've talked about this before, but then when I read this recently, and I've heard this before, I was like, wait a second, let me ask Deborah about that. Based on what you're trying to meet. So if I'm at 180 and I want to get to 150, then I should only be taking in about 150 grams of protein per day. Any comment on that? Thank you.
Yes, and it's a great question. So let's talk it all the way through. And right now, I'm gonna give you the short answer, Chris, and that's when I get done, you'll still have some things to think about. So it's not cut and dried, but I can tell you that if we go to the best answer that I give you first, do you know this? And stay unmuted if you're okay with that. Do you know on average how many grams of protein are you getting?
Yes, I'm getting about 110.
Okay, so that is a great starting point. And did you consciously increase in order to get that, or were you just kind of that's where you were?
I increased to get that. When I started tracking all the macros, I'm like way off.
Okay. Did it make a difference from wherever you were getting to 110? Did you notice a difference in stable energy,
Definitely.
more satiety? Okay. So that I want everybody to take away as the biggest learning piece right here. So I think rather than, I mean, we have to give you some kind of a target. And that's really what we think. Everybody wants that. But if we're talking, okay, what's the ratio and looking at how many protein, how many grams of carbs, and how many grams of fat, we have to kind of start with some kind of a framework. And will it ever be perfect? I don't think so. I think it's really hard to be perfect. In fact, I don't normally put everything into an app. And today I'm like, every once in a while you got to do that. So I started and I put it in and I'm like, I know better. And that breakfast I had was a little higher in fat and a little lower than protein. They were skewed. That's exactly the reason to do it, to catch yourself either doing something good or not as good and get yourself back to toeing the line. And so I think the most important thing is number one, wherever you are now, the most important thing that you should do is track to know that if you've gotten into a habit, and most of us are outside of potentially this last 3 days. So let's say you went to family, you went to the lake house, you were traveling a little bit, it was probably barbecue, barbecue, barbecue kind of fun. That might have been a little different, but normally, we are such creatures of habit that we're probably falling into either a really good or a really, oh, yeah, not quite serving us right. So tracking where you are and what you're doing on a regular basis is the most important thing you're going to do before you even cloud your decision on what should I be doing. You should know, let's figure out what am I doing now that isn't delivering to me the results that I really want. And, I'm no different than you. I took a look at that because I'm like, I've got 6 months left. I think it's always a great time to beginning of a month, beginning of second half of the year to regroup and say, am I on track for really what I want this year to be done with and, on track for the energy I want in this year. And I think the closer we get to the end, the finish line as opposed to the starting line, the more it matters to us, right? We just was like, I don't have time to play with, I'll do that later kind of thing. It's like, no, right now I need to be firing on all cylinders for things I want to do. I've got to have that energy. So take your own temperature. So I download, and there's lots of good apps. Macros First is the one I use. I'm just using the free version. You can do a paid version if you want the bells and the whistles, but I will probably be in there this week through Friday, and then I'm done with it. I don't need to do it and drive myself crazy. I just want to get an average of what am I doing on a daily basis. So I still have to go in there and enter in my lunch and dinner, it's so that I stay on track. And but this is helping me be accountable to it. Because if you don't put it in, JJ Virgin and I go back and forth on this a lot. She thinks most people overeat. I disagree, and I think most women undereat. And I'm like, she's like, well, we're not talking about athletes who are, doing endurance events. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. In my practice, in 4 decades, most women and men who actually get more fit undereat as opposed to overeat, because we've learned that diet culture and we think we're going to get to a certain point and we're really striving also to get more fit. But we forget we've created this active body that needs more calories. So just realize it doesn't matter whether you fall into the camp with JJ or with I on that, but it does matter that take a snapshot regularly and just do it now, do it again in January, and just double check. Are you really, is the average of what you are doing really what you thought you were doing? So once you know that and I want something to change, and most often we're going to do that. We want something to change. Then now we have the discussion of where do you need to be? And it is ideal body weight, not the weight you are and want to keep, but your ideal body weight. And there are others who would say your lean body weight, and not just your ideal body weight, but take your fat-free mass, your only lean mass. And I would say that's probably off. But here's what some other studies say. So I would say if I were breaking the tie on that and saying who's right, who's wrong, it is ideal body weight. That's what you want to shoot for. However, if you have a significant weight to lose to get there, you need to really realize that when we want weight loss, if you're going to put yourself into a caloric deficit, you're going to say, okay, here's about how many calories I need for being a woman, my age, my activity level, my height and weight. It'll give you a projection if you go to caloriecalculator.net. It'll suggest, and that's just food for thought because we're not actually measuring you. We're not putting you into a metabolic chamber and saying, what is it? But it's a good estimate. And if you're eating 1100 calories a day and the projection based on a woman, your weight, your activity level is 2000 calories, you're probably not going to lose weight ever. You've shut down your metabolism. We may actually need to eat your way to a faster metabolic rate. That's an important distinction. But back to my point, if you're going to use the protein calories focused on, so grams of protein for the ideal body weight that you want to be. And if that is a significant loss, you're going to have to put yourself in a caloric deficit to do that. The literature also will say that you should increase your grams of protein by about 10% in order to not lose muscle mass as you lose weight. Because inevitably, in almost all weight loss, some amount of protein is lost for the fat that's lost. And if it could be a lot more, it's up to 50% if we're not keeping an eye on it. And that means increasing the amount of protein that you're eating. And that doesn't mean discounting. You need the veggies, you need some fruit, you need to have some starchy potatoes, some Good carbohydrates are also important, but you have to keep that in mind. So your target weight might be 150, but if you're here and you need a caloric deficit, if we say 150 times 10%, we're going to take maybe much more like 165 so that we're accounting for that extra so we don't lose muscle mass. Studies by Bill Campbell, PhD out of Florida, really look at that. So he's worked with in his past, because he's now focused on women in perimenopause and menopause. But in his past, he's worked primarily with figure competitors, bodybuilders, both men and women, but typically they're younger. And he's really, that is a very conscious of lean muscle mass, fat-free mass group of people. And he's found that it is true that if calories don't count or don't change, if you increase the amount of those calories that are protein, you can increase your fat burning and you can lose weight potentially without losing lean muscle mass when you go really low calorie but have almost all protein. Now, that's not sustainable for a very long time. So, first story is find out where you are. At some point, just bumping up and trying to get to a higher level of protein, more satiety, more blood sugar stabilization, easier to control cravings, and probably more energy. So you become a believer just because you feel it. You feel the difference. This matters. And then it's easier not to just shoot for some arbitrary goal, but to think, okay, if I'm now at 110, if I want to try to get to maybe on a regular basis taking in 120, that's maybe 3 grams of protein more at each of 3 meals. And so, can I easily do that? And it's not too hard to just get that little at each meal. So, if you can kind of break it down into what would get me a little bit more or a little bit more, that can be really helpful. And in the case where you're trying to lose weight, you would want to say you're probably not going to want to go after from nuts and seeds or from a whole egg or from nut butter, because those come with so many calories because of the fat. So you're going to look for more lean, more protein dense, lean kinds of sources of protein. So I listened to a podcast yesterday and I was can't remember who I was listening to, but it was a registered dietitian and she was talking about there are so many foods with protein in them and she listed off so many. And I said to myself, going through this walk, I'm thinking, and Moses, who didn't really listen, I'm thinking a lot of people can, those sound really great, but you're now consuming so many more calories that, you've got to account for what else is going on. So you want to ask not just does it have protein in it, but what else is in it that you don't want, and that would go for all of the processed foods on the market now that are coming out, like chips with protein, high protein chips. Let's just agree it's still a processed food. And so probably not the ideal. If you were going to buy chips anyway, then maybe that's the better choice. But if you're not buying chips, don't let that be a free license to go buy chips because it says protein on it. So my recommendation would be that if you're shooting for a goal, know that, okay, I want to shoot maybe for between 150 and 165 grams of protein per day. But really, if I'm at 110, all I want to do is gradually, can I just close that gap a little bit and then see what happens? You may find that I'm getting full before I can eat that much. We don't want to force feed you. That would probably backfire on us too. But can we just begin to close the gap and see if we feel better and that we're not squeezing out, the broccoli and the carrots and cauliflower and the green beans and the asparagus and all of the micronutrient dense foods that we also know we need to be eating. And it probably can't become a job. I think it's important that we also know, enjoy it, enjoy your protein. And if you're somebody who does, it makes it easier. I mean, I would rather have a bigger piece of salmon than some of the other things, you know, on the table. Personally, I look forward to that. But other people really need those other things on their plate. So you need to know yourself. But if it becomes like eating protein just starts to feel like a job, I think none of us are going to be highly motivated and therefore it's not sustainable. So I think we have to look a little bit from all sides and say what works. And I also think that there are going to be days in your schedule that it makes sense that maybe tomorrow is a low protein day and it just happens to be that. You know, at the end of the day, that might feel good because it's just a digestive break. You ate lighter and maybe had a couple of smoothies with some protein, but it wasn't a really high protein day. But I think sometimes digestively, our bodies do really well with a break here and there and not necessarily always going all out, just with autopilot on. So, Chris, I hope that was helpful. But I do think we have to watch out for use the scale, use your bioimpedance scale, your SMART scale to measure what is happening it with body composition, not just with weight, to the muscle, to the fat, and or to the inflammation. Because we know if muscle or fat are not really changing, but I've lost weight, well, you've lost inflammation. So that's a good thing. And inches probably are changing for the better, if that's true. But the weight, we kind of have to lose the attachment with that, which is a really hard thing after decades of conditioning, you know, for it. So hopefully that was helpful. And if I inspired anybody else to have questions, let me know that. I am going to rifle through all the questions here in the chat. So we'll see if there may be other questions related to protein, but it's a great theme to keep going if anybody wants to ask some more. Sandra says, is it better to eat a snack before lifting or after? And what's the best workout snack? So that's a loaded question. So it depends on whether or where your meals are and your timing. So this is wide open depending on are you working out first thing in the morning? Are you working out mid-morning? You're working out, you know, early afternoon and hopefully not intensely anything after that. It's lighter. And then therefore, if it's lighter and just easy, you're not really having to think about food before or after a workout, if it's just light, because you don't necessarily inspire any need for it. But if you are, you know, doing something, we want a meal either before it, if it's after an overnight fast, having something is most likely better and more conducive. The literature still is pretty consistent, and this was true decades ago and still is true, that you or I will work harder or will work longer without it feeling harder or longer if we have a little fuel on board. And this doesn't mean have that 30, 35 grams of protein. It just means have a little something. So if it has protein in it, the older we are, so the more of you, if you're listening and you're postmenopausal, the older we get, we are more anabolically resistant, meaning we just have to do more. We are like holding on to the muscle, like we have to pull it back to us and hang on to it. It's going to take a little more work, a little more volume with our workouts, and a little more recovery between them, a little more protein than we needed 10 years ago, more than we needed 20, definitely. So all the little things we have to just work on it to get it. So potentially having a little protein even before cardio, which is, we wouldn't have thought that even, gosh, as recently as 3 years ago, I probably would have said before cardio, you know, before interval training, doing some carbohydrates when you work really intensely, the body turns to carbs anyway. It doesn't have the time or the energy to go break down other things. But studies from Abby Smith Ryan out of University of North Carolina say that for women who are, you know, postmenopause, and menopausal. If we have a little bit of protein before, and I'm talking, maybe a couple boiled eggs equivalent. If you don't tolerate eggs, throw that one out, but something else, you will help yourself preserve muscle during the exercise. Now, that means you didn't really have a meal. So at some point within an hour, hour and a half after you work out, if your workout was an hour, it's time to eat. And it would be a good thing for you to do that. Muscle protein synthesis goes up with resistance training. Muscle protein synthesis goes up when you eat a high protein meal. Why wouldn't we want to marry them so we go up more? So it's a really, really great combination. So you do want to eat probably something a little before if it hasn't been that, say, you had breakfast at 8 and maybe you work from home, you can take breaks when you want to, or you're not working and you're going to do a mid-morning workout at 10. You don't need a snack. If you had a full meal at 8, you're now digested and you're good to go. And when you're done within probably an hour and a half, you're probably going to have lunch. So perfect timing. If you're, not getting a workout in until lunch and it's been since 8 that you had breakfast, I would have a little something beforehand if it's been 4 hours. So yes, I would have a little something. And again, it's not about having a full meal so much that you have to then wait because you feel bogged down. It's just have a little something on board. That's it. It's kind of light the fire. It's just getting the sparks going and holding on to your muscle mass, preserving it so your body won't break it down. If there's no fuel on board, your body will break down muscle for the essential amino acids to fuel the workout. So I hope that helped. So the question on is it better? It's not really a better. It's just there's a lot of variables that would throw you in there. So the best workout snack, and that's a tricky word, right? So if it says always, never, or best in a true or false question, and you're the teacher writing that question, you can't ask that one. So there are better snacks for you and better snacks for me. And you might have to test what works for you. So if I were doing something, say in the afternoon, and I hadn't been able to get to it before then, because typically I don't do a weight workout very late in the day, but I might have like an apple and nut butter before it's like a 3:30 or 4 p.m. strength training workout. So it's been 3, 4 hours since lunch. I'm gonna have that snack. And then afterward, probably shortly afterward, I will have dinner. But that's a really great snack for me. My blood sugar comes up, but it doesn't spike. And so I'm kind of in this great place to be prepared. And the reason I know that is number one, I know how I feel and I've always liked it, but I wear a continuous blood glucose monitor. We are doing a CGM challenge if anybody wants to join us in August of 2026 as we do this live, by the way. And so if you order yours through flipping50.com/myglucose, we'll invite you to the WhatsApp group where I will coach in there all month long. So if you happen to be inside of the membership and you have your own glucose monitor, you can follow along yourself and do it inside of the community. But if you actually use the app that I'm giving you, we'll open it up for you inside of the WhatsApp groups and get a little bit more. And I'll do a voice message in response much of the time. But that is helpful at knowing, what works for you versus what doesn't. And if your blood sugar is stable, certain things will work. If your blood sugar is a little unstable, snacks can sometimes sit a little differently and may make you kind of spike and then really crash while you're working out. So you have to test a little bit to know what is best for you, because that's the best answer to that question. Jennifer said, I had to go get a new watch. Yesterday was my first day jogging for over a year. After I finished, my watch sent me a message that it took me 2 minutes to recover. That seems long, but assuming it is my lack of conditioning, what would be a good recovery time? So depend a little bit. So Jennifer, if you were doing intervals, anything up to 3 minutes is, an adequate recovery time. But if there's no history there, your watch is really talking out of turn. So it doesn't really know. If your watch has no history on you, it's really kind of arbitrary that it would tell you that is a long recovery time. And, the watch might also be based on norms if there's no data from you pulled in from any other source. Maybe it's based on norms, and other women in your age are probably not running. So they're not putting the effort out that you did. And so they don't have much recovery time at all because they didn't work very hard and you're working relatively harder. So there's a couple of reasons why that might be true. But in terms of interval training, recovery from an interval could be anywhere from, 30 seconds to 3 minutes, and it doesn't really matter. The point is, did you reach capacity when you were training? So if it were more of a slower, steady run, then it was saying that you didn't recover for it took at least 2 minutes for you to recover. That might be a little bit different because potentially you've lost some endurance, but if your heart rate didn't go that high and then took you, a couple minutes to recover, I think that it's got to be, we've got to take it in with relativity, right? So if you went longer and it's going to feel like endurance, if it was a really long time, you wouldn't start back, with 20 minutes or half an hour if you hadn't done it before. Surely, would you? So there is that. But if it had been a really long time since you've run first day jogging after a year, I don't know how you went, but ideally you ran a little bit, you walked a little bit, you ran a little bit, you walked a little bit. And it was probably just saying it took a minute for you, even though you hadn't gotten your heart rate up that long. I think, it makes sense, but again, I'm back to where I started. The watch didn't really have any history on you unless it was transferred from the previous watch. So I think I would flush it and just let it start learning you from where you are now. And the comments should get more on target as you go along. Debbie says, just getting started, not sure where to find scorecard to mark beginning information, and also not able to find where I record my health information as indicated in my email. Any help would be appreciated. Awesome. Okay, so welcome. And the scorecard inside of the app is in Start Here. There's a category that says Start Here, and at the very top, when you're browsing and you see the scorecard will scroll across the top and you see a welcome video. So you can either click, you can search in the search bar. There's a what are you looking for? And you could go to start here or ask for a scorecard. So for all of you, that's very relative as well. So lots of little places to look that even some of you who've been in there might not see it. So and in your welcome email, there would have been a login to the flipping50.com site. That's where you'll log in with that username and password, not in the app, but in the website. And there is an area that says My Progress or Progress Tracking. And you can actually click to look at your health history, fill out your health history for yourself. So it's what in some circles is called a PAR-Q. So you're really looking at, do I have any health risks? Am I taking any medication? It's great to do that on the regular because as you increase your fitness level, potentially some of that might change, might improve. But also if something does change, it will give you a wake-up call that maybe I should ask about this. I should ask about, are there any side effects to this medication, either of your physician or of me and from our community coach. And then there's two sets of other questions. So one, is a little bit more of taking your body weight, your composition, and your measurements and recording those. And the other one is called My Wellness. And that's where I'm asking you on a 0 to 4 rating scale, more of your perception. Like, how do I rate my energy, my sleep, my digestion, elimination, my libido, my focus, concentration? I wake up in the morning rested or I don't. I stay asleep all night or I don't. Keeping track of all of those things is also really helpful. We want to see all of those ideally move into threes and fours. You are doing really well or on your way to doing really well. Versus if you're at a 0, 1, or a 2, those suggest maybe we would want to send you to a mini course that is about sleep, for instance, if sleep scores were part of your challenge. That we can help you get to the right place. And any of those scores kind of suggest 0, 1, or 2, you've got room for improvement. That's a great conversation to have with Rita, who's your member onboarding, or inside of the community where we can help you again decide what's the best plan for me, which program would be ideal based on what's going on for me. So, a lot of information just came at you. Let me know if you need any of that repeated. Linda said, if I'm getting 30 to 40 grams of protein at each of 3 meals, would you still advise adding essential amino acids? I've never added these. I know you've said you use them mostly when you're traveling. Also, do adding essential amino acids have any influence on helping with bone density? So, great question. So, the answer to Linda's question and to anybody else who might be thinking, oh, that's a good question. So, the question should be, how much does Linda need, right? So, you would use essential amino acids as a supplement if you weren't reaching that goal that you want to hit for protein. So, Linda, I know you and I know how tiny you are. So, for you, if you're eating 30 to 40 grams of protein, so you're giving me a range of you're eating between 90 and 120, and you probably hit your weight right there, right? So Linda's fairly small and petite. And even with that, what is it? Titanium hip? I don't know, but she's bionic these days. But she's probably hitting her needs, her protein needs. So if that's true, the essential amino acids really are over and above. But unless there's some reason why she needs them, then I would say no. So if we were hitting 120 and we really needed 160 and we were like, I'm absolutely full, I cannot eat another bite, can't do it. Can't put it in. I'm trying, but this just is not happening. That's where essential amino acids might come in, that you actually need more, but you're really struggling to get it in. Or, and you were plant-based, trying to do it all with plants. It's very difficult to do it all with plants without accumulating a lot of calories. And the calories come from carbohydrates. Because beans and legumes and all of the higher protein sources of plant proteins have lots of carbs. So we can't get around that. And so a lot of people who really are trying to do almost all plant need essential amino acids. And it's a game changer for them because it really helps them get over the top. So that said, that's where it comes in handy. And I use them, I do when I travel, because if I'm, on a plane for 5 hours going, say, to the West Coast or coming back home again, or it's not so bad anymore because, well, I take that back. It's bad for other reasons because now it's 2 plane rides and it's a whole day. So there's that. But I am in an airport, not necessarily eating anything desirable there, but it's different. But if I'm, missing a meal because of flights or travel or something, that's where at the end of the day, I've got to take inventory and say, did I hit my protein? So I missed a meal because I was on planes, trains, and automobiles. Then I'm going to make it up with the essential amino acids. But I'm not putting it on top of also the meals if I hit it with the meals. So hopefully that makes sense, but it's just something that, and every once in a while, I use it so little these days that I have to go to the bottom of that bottle and make sure it's not expired. So, but that was a great question to ask. So in terms of bone density, hitting protein has the same results on bone density as it does muscle. So muscle and bone both depend. Every cell in your body needs protein. It uses the essential amino acids in protein to function. So it's not just about muscle building. Protein is not just if you want to be a bodybuilder. It's if you want to be a healthy, aging, older adult. And you want cognitive function. So as long as you're hitting that protein, but getting more than the amount of protein, unless you're trying to lose weight. Remember, we talked about that earlier. There's really no reason that you need an additional amount for bone density. You need about the same. It's based on the muscle. The muscle's stronger, it's going to pull on the bone, and the bone is partially made up of protein as well. So hopefully that answers all questions. And Jennifer K says, my smart scale tells me muscle mass in pounds and skeletal muscle in percentage. Some of these scales are really bizarre. Yeah, is there any ideal amount of muscle mass in pounds, or is that based on ideal weight and your height? How do you figure out what the ideal is? It's a great question, but the most important thing to me is that you're looking at that number and you are never, ever losing it. You're only gaining it or you're maintaining it. But you're never losing it. So we're not necessarily seeking a goal. What you're doing is putting money in the bank. So what you're doing is putting in your 401k, your pension, your whatever is going to be there when you retire. Because when we start hitting 60s, late 60s, 70s, we're withdrawing. Even though we may be lifting weights and eating protein, we are going to start losing some muscle simply because of aging. We've got lots of tricks and maybe we'll put some new ones together, but it's probably going to take supplementation, and some other biohacking in order not to lose some muscle mass and some strength. So there's no real answer to that. However, there are some equations related to sarcopenia. And if you Google sarcopenia, it's more related to where do you sit in terms of sarcopenic muscle mass to your body weight and height. And that will tell you if you've lost or have such a low amount, but there isn't the opposite end of the scale where it's like, here's the premier, here's the supreme. So it's a great question, but there isn't here's the great, and this one is insurance because it's not, we still have to work on holding on to it harder. In fact, we need to buckle that in with a seatbelt to hold on to it. But great question. You're welcome, Sandra. Lacey said, is there any way to, whoops, hold on. Is there any way to print out the results from the my wellness report? I've tried to email it to myself, but it doesn't show the whole page. I can see the numbers, but not the full question. That I don't know. And I think I've tried as well, but I don't know that it is printable. If anybody's had any luck, do that, let me know. Otherwise, my suggestion would be take a screenshot of it. So, take your command and make your screen the size of that page small enough that you can take a screenshot of it instead. So you've got a snapshot and then you can blow up that snapshot. Just to freeze a moment in time, if you want to do that. Jennifer said, thanks. That makes sense. You would be proud. 20 minutes was the goal. Okay, good. All right. Nice. Anybody else have a question, a follow-up question about protein? Because that's kind of a theme for today, which is a really good one. On Wednesday, for those of you who are in VIP, the masterclass this month, we're going to do some halo coaching. So, diving into the method that we use to look at where's your hormone level, your status, pre and most of you are not, but perimenopause, menopause transition, or your postmenopause, and your activity age, consistent exercise activity age, your limitations, if you've got them, time and energy can both be some, but any other, arthritis, rheumatoid, or osteo, and any other things that you're dealing with, and then the chief outcomes that you want, and you and I can co-collaborate on that. But if you want to come, you're going to come live, be sure to come in early and just put your name in the box and say, hey, I want to be a hot seat. I want to be coached. And we'll take as many as possible and give everybody about 8 minutes where you can, suggest to me, here's what I'd like, here's where I am now, here's, my goal for this quarter, and what I'd like to change. And then we'll rifle through your halo assessment and look at, because of these things, this is what you'd want to focus on most and probably what's going to move the needle for you the most. So I will help you and go into that. And you, if you're on the call, even if you don't get into a hot seat, and some of you may prefer that, you want to sit in the back in the corner and watch, you'll learn a lot, because you'll learn something probably from anyone that comes into the hot seat who's like you in some way, and begin to hear what I echo over and over again so that you can apply it to yourself. And you can ask a quick question in the chat as a follow-up. Say, I'm just like that, except for this. What would I do different? Those would be great ways to make use out of it. Debbie says, thanks for your help. Barb helped me find scorecard and health history. Thank you. She's gold. Chris says, thanks so much. Will we get an email to remind us about the masterclass? Yes, I hope so. Yes. So I'm not charged of tech, but yes, you should get a reminder and those typically, and you will get a reminder generally if you're brand new here, just so that you know about the replay for today. So if you ever can't make it to a live on Monday, but you want to listen afterward, we download those to the site in an audio so you can download it to your device and take off and go for a walk and get movement without sitting in front of a screen. You can still access to it. I've been a part of so many masterminds, and often the calls are, there's no presentation, but yet it's a Zoom. And so even though I'll try to listen while I'm walking, if I lose the internet, I can't really do it. So I wanted for you that you would be able to move and listen and not have to be tethered to a screen. So hopefully that'll help. Valerie said, I'm restarting after not lifting for a year postmenopausal. I'm going to start with Stronger 3. What is a good schedule? Recovery days and adding some cardio. Great. And I'm going to scroll up just to make sure that I see this one. Colleen says, how can I improve my HRV? So HRV is heart rate variability, just so anybody who doesn't knows now what that means. And the heart rate variability is the time between beats of heart. So if we say, what's your beats per minute? Most of you will know, or you've got a watch on that will tell you. My watch is dead. I feel naked actually leaving the house without it. But most of you know what your beats per minute is and what it averages. And so what you should know about heart rate variability, and we've been studying that for probably 15 years now, mostly at first coaches who were coaching athletes or triathletes or runners. And then, looking at, the coaches themselves got really curious and generally all began monitoring it. And then now we're using it on your Apple Watches and your Fitbit and any kind of Garmin that you might be looking at. But that's measuring not the beats per minute, but the time between beats. And ironically, the more variable that is, like a little bit of time, and then there's more time, and then there's a little bit, and then a little more, the more variable that is, the higher your heart rate variability And you want a high score. It's not like golf. We want it to be higher. We love variability between the beats. So when we have that, we know that you are truly recovering. So things like deep breathing, box breathing, the inhale slowly, hold it at the top for 4 beats, exhale slowly, hold it at the bottom for 4 beats. That's box breathing, same count per side. And just learning to really get good quality sleep, sometimes eating more calories, making sure that you're getting adequate carbohydrates. So all of the things that you can do to reduce your stress level or at least improve it. Some of our stressors won't go away. We love some of them, right? But they're still not going away. But we can laugh more. We can look at art we love. We can look outdoors at green, forest bathing kinds of things. There are a lot of things we can do to offset our stressors, and all of those things contribute. So for some of us, we may need a little help. Might mean herbal medicines like ashwagandha or maca are common ones to help with sympathetic nervous system, essential oils. So lots of things that involve all of the senses will help, but that is recovery. So how well are you doing with recovery? And you may need a little bit more help beyond that. So maybe do we need to look at hormones? Do you need to look at micronutrient sufficiency? How are you doing there? So all of those things would help you as well. And back to you, Valerie. So stronger three. So ideally, you want the rules to be that you've got those two strength training workouts a week. You want to position them so you have good recovery, ideally 72 hours between workouts. And I heard this today, and I'm kind of surprised because I was listening to a podcast while I was working out, and it was a young woman who very good. She's on a lot of podcasts and she does a really great job, but she's got two children under two. So it tells you a little something about how old she is. And she's like, well, you want at least 48 hours recovery between. And I'm like, okay, wait. Let's just stop because she should know this. And the truth is that was minimum. That was always minimum. And 48 hours minimum does not mean do it every 48 hours. So a lot of people, 20-year-olds, elite Olympic athletes needed more than that their whole lives, not just because they're 50 or 60 or beyond. But we definitely do need more recovery. And the reason is muscles, joints, the ligaments, tendons, connective tissue need more recovery because they're older parts, right? They're not as resilient as when they were brand new and right out of the factory. So we need a little more. The muscles actually probably recover as quickly as anything because they have a lot of circulation. And the more fit we are, the more true that is. However, the ligaments and the tendons do not have the same circulation going to it. So they don't get oxygen supplied. They're going to recover slower. So even though your muscles may feel like, I feel great, I feel ready, I'm not sore, I'm just fully ready to go, your joints and ligaments are not. And so if you get injured frequently, or you're injured and then you're injured again and you're injured again, your joints and your ligaments are telling you, hey, you're ignoring me. You're pretending you're 25. And guess what? I'm just here to remind you, you're not. So you can move, but if you want to move more frequently, instead of running, if you love running, go get in a swimming pool, do something not weighted or do a rowing machine, something that is complementary and you're not going to bang on the same joints and ligaments and pull on them. Get on an exercise bike, but realize if you're taxing the joints and the muscles regularly and repeatedly, you're interfering with that HRV. And if you're interfering with HRV, your muscles and your bones and your ligaments are not recovering. And we have to get that recovery because that is when the good stuff happens. We need stimulus and we need recovery so that we have adaptation. And most of us want to skip from stimulus to adaptation and let's do it again faster. And we just cannot do that. The recovery really has to expand when we get older. So twice weekly, 72 hours between, like a Monday, Thursday, or a Tuesday, Friday would be great. And then work on mobility. So you can drag into your week. We want to walk every day. We need to move, and walking and weights, don't underestimate the power of the two of those. But as you get started, not necessarily today, but as you get started, I would say, like week three, gauge how do I feel? How is my energy level? Because I've been walking now and I've been doing the weight training. If I'm feeling really good, I might then add a little bit of high intensity interval training. Add one session a week, see how you feel doing that. Feel still really good a couple of weeks later after doing that one, add a second one, see how you do. But always change one variable at a time. And that way you're doing the scientific experiment. So you will always know what made me feel better, what made me feel worse. And you can pull that last thing out that kind of tipped you over the edge until you're ready again. And maybe if you pull out an interval training, you put in, mobility. All of us probably should be working on mobility more than we do or more than we are. Because as we get older, the thing that's going to keep the door open so we can do the strength training or do the high intensity interval training that will keep our VO2 and our strength up for optimal longevity is mobility. If we lose mobility in our ankles and our hips and our upper back, we will start to be more and more limited. So those three places are really important. Your ankles, because we've been walking on them for however old you are, minus probably 10 months, right, is about the time that we start walking and really weight bearing. And then once we hit that, we don't go back to crawling, right? So we're almost always on those ankles and have been. And some of us have run on them and twisted them and sprained them and strained them and got into car accidents on them. And so they've taken a beating and we're jumping, and we want to do the jumping so we get the bone density. However, we have to be a little bit more careful and cautious about being sure we put the mobility in there. So if you're doing down dogs on a regular basis, you're getting deep flexion. That's one way to help yourself get some mobility in. But, work on pulling the toes, feet together, point it in, point them out, rotate around the ankle, and do all of the things that you can there. So I would pull in all of the pieces. And if you go through the scorecard, think about all of the parts there. And there's a category of exercise in the membership for you on each of those. So how did you do in power, in mobility, and in stability? And if that was an area where I could probably stand to improve in that one. You're probably not going to overdo it working on your stability. So put that in any day on a recovery day. Mobility is the same way, rotating through the spine and stretching, probably always a feel good. Power, doing more jumping, that you might have to plan a little bit more carefully so that you're not going hard, hard, hard every day. But that power is just minutes a day. You're not doing it like a part-time job. So those little pieces you can drag in also when you find a video that I really like this one, kind of challenges me, but I can tell it's really good for me. Favorite it and then pull it into your calendar whenever you want to. So you'll be able to get back to it really easily. Lori said, I think you have said adding collagen to coffee shouldn't count as total protein intake. But if I have protein with it, such as an apple and nut butter or yogurt, can I count the collagen in my coffee? Not so much. So you're not getting much protein from the nut butter, you're getting a fat. So there's a little protein there. But if you were going to say, I'm having a pea protein smoothie and I'm adding collagen on top of that, I'll let you count all those grams of protein. Yes. Does that make sense? So you're having a high fat and a carb snack with the apple and nut butter. Not necessarily are you having a high protein food there. I just want to make that really clear. Okay. And yogurt. So if it's a high protein yogurt, then yes, more so, as long as you're hitting that 30 grams, but it can't be a part of that 30 grams. You need to hit the 30 to 35, and then you can take the collagen up and over that, but you're not taking 15 grams from some high quality source and then making it the rest of the way with collagen. Doesn't work like that. You want to protein stack it with collagen as the extra, because what it's doing is adding a little bit more essential amino acids, but it's not adding them high enough to tap into the muscle. So I hope that helps. So, for instance, this morning I put both collagen and protein, pea protein, in my coffee. Did that count? Yes, right? Both counted. Jennifer said, what is the new Stronger program going to be called? That will be similar to Stronger 7 with shorter workouts, around 35 minutes. Hope to start as soon as you put it in there. Yes. Okay. Thanks for asking. Perfect timing. It's called Stronger 2 Short, Not Sweet. So it's still meant to be a little spicy and push you over the edge. There are week one and two. The workouts are in there. There's no resource book yet. There's no e-guide in there, and there's no workout sheets, but you can go get the workouts. Inside, there are two workouts. They are short. And as this program progresses, I will add a third workout that is a little more balanced in total body so that we get adequate volume in it. But I put in there's longevity workouts in there. So there's something that you're doing 5 days a week. So you're doing strength training twice. There are two longevity snack workouts, and then there's two mobility. So it's kind of in there given to you. If you don't happen to love those mobility workouts or you want power instead, put something in there. But in addition to that, go for a walk. So it's called Stronger 2, Short, Not Sweet, because the current Stronger 2 is going to go bye-bye. Okay. So that Cellulite Solutions was a great idea back in, I don't know even what it was, 2016, when new science came out. And it's probably been my least favorite for any of you. The videos from it will still be there. So if somebody needs to go searching for upper body videos because a lower body, a limb, a joint is injured, you will still find them. Just the organized program will go away. So just so that you know, that's why it's called Stronger Too, Short, Not Sweet. So meant to be a little spicy. One workout a week is upper body dominant or with emphasis, and we hit the lower body, but we just barely hit it enough to count. The other one is lower body dominant, and we hit the upper body just enough to count it. So those are the ones that are, I think one of them is even 23 minutes long. It's very short. But they're right around 30, 32, 33 minutes otherwise so far. So thank you for asking that. Okay, everybody, I think we did it. And if there are any other questions, please let me know. All right. That is it. And I will see some of you on Wednesday, hopefully.